It's now time for the MLB.com Cut Forecast. Cut Forecast. The Cut Forecast. It's a cast from Cut Four. Here it is.
Hello and welcome to the Cut Forecast. I'm Dakota Gardner. I am joined, as always, by Gemma Kaneko.
Yes, welcome.
Yes.
I said welcome to myself.
Very direct. Welcome. Yeah. Welcome, Gemma. And we also have the LA Senior Bureau Chief slash Czar, Michael Clare, has returned. He's back on the pod yet again. Welcome back, Michael.
Thank you, and thank you for the promotion to Czar. That's so exciting.
Yeah, well, I felt like you needed to have like an additional piece of sort of flair to your job title.
Yeah, I gotta see if I can get that on a business card. Can you imagine if someone handed you a business card that had Czar on it?
I know. Well, you know, they did that in, like, government in, like, the 90s, right? There are all kinds of Czars and stuff like that.
Didn't we just recently?
Appointed somebody a Czar. It's a great job title, though. So, Claire, congrats. You're now.
Just, you know,
thank you so much.
Beware revolutions in winter and months, you know?
Yes.
Well, fortunately, LA doesn't really have winter, so I should be okay.
That's true. All right. Well, here, there is so much baseball happening, and especially now that the Olympics are over, you really have no excuse not to watch baseball.
It's true.
I say. And so we should dive right in here, and I have to talk about this because this happened yesterday, and there was a baby at the ballpark at PNC Park, and it was a little Pirates baby. And it was trying to eat some ice cream, or I guess its parents were trying to feed it some ice cream. And it just experienced that thing that we all feel, which is brain freeze. And you could sense on its face how pained and how struggled it was. It wanted to have the ice cream, but it felt so bad. You can see all of this just high drama play out on MLB.com/cut4. You'll see the post right there. But it got us, well, it got me wondering this question. And I'm going to pose it now to the two of you. Which ballpark food do you always eat, but always comes at a price? It's some sort of like, oh, I'm eating this, but it makes me so uncomfortable while I eat it, or I'm so unhappy. I will start, and I'll give you guys sort of a minute to think. Mine is also ice cream, but it's the ice cream that comes in the miniature helmet, which I love, and I love the little helmet. I love the fact that it's ice cream. I like that it's ice cream plus a souvenir, but they fill it up so much that it starts to melt in the middle of summer, and it melts over the side, and I make a mess everywhere. And so I have the ice cream, and I like it, but it's so much, and then afterwards I'm like, oh, God, now I have to go take a bath. What food item do you have that you always want to get but always comes at a cost? Claire, why don't we start with you?
So the problem for me is less a singular food item and more the sheer quantity where, yeah, first inning, let me get a hot dog. Third inning, not hungry, but those nachos look great. Fifth inning, still not hungry. Maybe I'll get another hot dog. Maybe I'll get a cheesesteak. And the whole time I'm going, why am I doing this? This is terrible. I'm not hungry. I don't even feel good. But it's like I'm here. It smells good. It looks good. And I just keep doing it.
That's true. The sheer amount of food that one eats at a ballpark, is, I think, qualifies.
Oh, for
pain
sure. Yeah.
That you feel. When I was a little kid, that was always my thing when I would go to various sporting events, is my parents would just ply me with all this food, and then I would go home and I would feel sick for like a week, and it was great.
Yeah.
My family, we're snack people. We used to bring broccoli. No, just like, you know, sandwiches and bags.
I like, pictured you like having like a raw potato.
Clementines. Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Chocolate bars. We just brought our own stuff.
Well.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Gemma, what's your.
My first thought was ice cream helmets too, because I love them. I really love ice cream, and I love ice cream helmets. But as I've said before on this podcast, I think actually, is that I never take the helmet home because you can't, it's like not easy to wash it out.
Right.
You know, because what, am I going to go get up and stand in line for 15 minutes to try to wash it out? Like, no, that's really annoying. I don't want to miss the game to like wash out this helmet. So I always get angry that I go, don't take the helmet home. But I paid the extra $1.50 or whatever because it's more ice cream in the helmet. So that's one of mine, but also because it comes at a literal cost that I just like throw away a dollar.
Yeah.
But my other thing is hot dogs, just hot dogs in general, because I don't eat them anywhere but ball games or cookouts.
Yeah.
And I always regret it because hot dogs are kind of weird. They're just, What's in them? I don't know. I feel kind of bad about
it. Your anti-hot dog dumb is just so frustrating and baffling to me.
I know.
And I hate it, is really what I'm trying
to say. Well, listen, Claire, I think, will agree with me on this, that the point of a hot dog is really not even the meat itself. It's all the stuff you put on it.
The meat is good, too. No, the meat
is not good.
Yeah, it is. It's like any other kind of, like, meat.
Blended meat
product. Yeah, I don't know.
Just uttering that phrase makes me unhappy and uncomfortable. But I like the experience of eating a hot dog at a ballpark, so I do it, despite the fact that I don't really want to know what hot dogs are made of. And even thinking about it makes me unhappy.
Well, you're wrong. So, sorry.
Here's the thing. A tofu dog, they fill it with all the same spices. And so really you're just looking for, like, protein, like, chewiness. And then you top it in all your toppings, your fried onions, your mustards, your cheeses, your peppers, whatever you want. So, like, that's the thing. I'll eat hot dogs at the ballpark, but I'll eat tofu dogs at home just because I'm looking for just, like, meat feel, meat equivalent.
Yeah, that's weird. You're both weird.
I like brats, though.
A hot dog is delicious. I was at Yankee Stadium this weekend. I had an incredible hot dog. I was actually...
Why didn't you get the chicken bucket?
I wasn't hungry enough for a chicken bucket. Also, they have this thing that I saw, and I in full interest of full disclosure, I was at an NYCFC game that happened to be at Yankee Stadium. But they also have Cheeto popcorn. I don't know if you've heard about this. It's popcorn, and they like toss it with the Cheeto stuff. I didn't have that because I'm not a very adventurous ballpark aficionado, apparently, but just so you're aware, that exists. So
that sounds amazing.
Yeah, I know. I need to go back. I need to try it.
I would just have to eat it with, like, a plastic glove because I hate sticky fingers.
Oh, I know. I'm waiting until September to get it because, like, you know, it needs to be, like, a fall baseball food item because, like, if your hands are covered in Cheeto dust, and, like, it's hot and soupy. Like, that's not good. But I definitely want to try it, though. Okay, but let's move on here. Let's stick in the food family, though. Because, you know, a lot of times what will happen is a major leaguer will have, like, a big year, big month, or just in general will be a beloved franchise figure. And, you know, we've talked before about ways of honoring these individuals, be it retiring their number, building them a statue, naming something after them. But we thought... the best thing that teams often do is create a specialty food item for that person. The most famous example of this, obviously, is the Ichi Roll, which was a sushi roll that they had out in Seattle in honor of Ichiro Suzuki, who is amazing.
Every Japanese restaurant in the country should have that, in my opinion, but...
Why do you say Japanese restaurant? Shouldn't it
every,
just be
restaurant.
Every restaurant?
Yes, they should hire a sushi chef at every single restaurant specifically to make that roll.
But regardless of that, the question it inevitably raises is which current player that doesn't have a food item do you think needs one? Or maybe they do have a food item, you think they need a different one. Gemma, why don't we start with you?
Okay, so I came up with a couple of these, discard a bunch. Here's one that I'm, like, iffy on, but I feel I'm going to share with you anyway. I have a couple more.
Okay,
but
the Cupwork has a safe space.
I'm going to start with this one. Okay, so I feel like in New York, in the West Village, there's a gelato place called Grom.
I hate you
okay?
right now.
Okay, look.
With you being so, in New York, in the West Village, there's gelato.
It's great gelato.
Could you be more despicable?
I probably could. I could try, but I will not. I'll keep the terrible literary inaccessible references to a minimum in this podcast. So there's this gelato. It's really good. It's called Grom, City Field in New York, where there is a pitcher whose name is Jacob DeGrom.
Uh-huh.
So I think that there should be a partnership there struck up. So there could be DeGrom gelato. I think that would be good.
That would be really good.
They could serve it in helmets that I would throw away at the ballpark because I'm too lazy to wash them out. That would be nice. I also just am totally baffled that the A's haven't been selling, like, Cocoa Crisp cereal bars for years. Like, or Cocoa Crisp cereal milk ice cream. Really, any cereal-related item for him should have been done a long time ago.
That's true.
But this is my proposal.
Okay.
So
That was all prologue.
Yes. So I went to a Cyclones game a couple weeks ago, and it was great. It was so much fun. Stadium is awesome. I had really good seats. Mm-hmm. Got a super creepy Wilmer Flores bobblehead, and I love it. Just generally delightful. But
that's the two-sided one.
The two-sided one.
Crying and happy.
Yes, and he has four hands and 4 feet.
Yeah.
Cronenberg.
Well, I got it on Harry Potter night, so I was describing it as the Voldemort bobblehead.
Oh, okay.
You know, like in the first one,
sure,
with the two faces.
I'm sure Wilmer appreciates that.
He probably does. But the great thing about the Cyclones Park is they have a lot of food options. Mm-hmm. And one thing they have is deep fried risotto balls.
Ooh.
And they have deep fried risotto balls with Nutella in the middle, dipped in brown sugar.
Is that good?
Amazing. I
was thinking of risotto as more like savory, though.
Well, they had savory ones too. They had a pizza one and a pesto one, and those are both amazing as well. But the Nutella one was just delicious. And in fact, I missed catching a foul ball because I was too busy eating the Nutella.
You're catching
ball.
Risotto balls. You're catching the more important ball.
The thing is that I got the risotto got all over my hands, and I was like, oh, I couldn't catch the ball. It was embarrassing. But I think that the Cubs should start stocking this item and call them Anthony Risotto Balls.
I see what you did there.
Yes.
That's good.
They're delicious. You could serve it in like a little glove that had his name on it or something. It would
in
be
a
cute.
Glove. I like that.
They make at MCU Park, they serve them in half an egg carton.
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
It was cool. Everyone should go to Cyclones and get them. They're
go.
Delicious.
I know. Ever since we talked to Billy Horner, their communications
entertainment
leader, I've wanted to go. I haven't yet.
But that's my pitch to the Cubs.
That's a good pitch. Also, the concept of a risotto ball, regardless of what is involved.
Delicious.
Sounds delicious.
Yes.
Claire, what do you got? What is the food item that you would like to have themed for the major leaguer of your choice?
So, first, we need to open up some new kiosks, some new shops.
Okay.
I don't want just one item. I want the Jeremy Hazel Bakery at Busch Stadium, where, you know, you go in and you get your croissants and your French breads And then you get those breads. You then fly to San Diego, and you get the Ryan Buchter's Butcher Shop. And you get all your fine meats. Get like 2 pounds of like I don't know ribs, and just like a sit in your seat so you can go home and cook it later.
Gross.
Those are the two things.
In the park for like 3 hours with a bunch of uncooked meat.
Well, see, what I like about Claire's vision here is that it sounds more like it's like a baseball-themed village that has like all of the necessities for life, which I like.
Wait, are you thinking what I'm thinking now? We open up a theme park with like the Disney Main Street, but it's the baseball village.
Yeah.
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 I'm on board.
Sounds like basically where when you close your eyes and lie down at night, where you picture yourself to live.
And then just imagine like Belle would be singing like, there goes the Hazel Baker with all the breads, and there would be, you know, more puns. Like, this is genius. We just need to get the startup capital for all this.
Okay. I like it. You could have a Skip Shoemaker Cobbler.
Aww.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Like that?
But then the one I really want the most, the one food, is the Billy Rum Hamilton. And anytime he makes a great catch, rum ham is served.
Well, I feel like he would need to be sort of acquired by Philadelphia, right, for that to work.
That's true.
So while he's still in Cincy, we'll wait until that happens. Okay, well, that's a magical world and journey that you've taken us on, Michael. I appreciate it. So I kind of took a different tack, because you clearly thought of, like, really good names that could serve as inspiration for food items.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of went the other way. I was like, well, who are the players that I really like?
Uh-huh.
And then I'll try to come up with sort of things that will fit them. So I thought, like, Nolan Arenado, well, he's really great, but I couldn't think of a really good food item for Arenado.
Nolan Arenacho.
Yeah, it feels like a stretch. I don't know.
I don't think it's that much of a stretch.
I don't love nachos. So then I thought Christian Yelich, but same deal. I couldn't really think of anything. Julio Teheran, couldn't think of anything. But then it dawned on me, there's a player who has not only the perfect name for this, but also it captures my desire to have breakfast food in a ballpark.
Ooh.
And that player is Manny Machado, and it would be a bowl of Manny Machado's cereal.
Oh.
So I could have my cereal and I could sit in the outfield.
I thought it was going to be Machado donuts.
That would be good too. Just any sort of like breakfast food that you could make with Manny Machado's name, I'd be down.
You could have Manny Machaca breakfast burritos.
See, that'd be good.
Oh.
But I like, see, I also, just the idea of cereal as a ballpark food would be very unique.
You know, but I think we would run into the same issue, which is then we would have a bowl full of milk and we wouldn't know what to do with
it. The milk. You never done that with cereal?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. But then also, there's like, you can't, you're not going to get it all. You're going to have the milky residue like you do from ice cream.
Go throw it away.
No, you're going to throw away the souvenir bowl.
But it's not going to be a souvenir bowl.
Well, that's lame.
I mean, you could get it.
It's a souvenir bowl in the shape of Manny Machado's head.
Yeah,
that's great. Just
batting,
a massive
batting
bowl.
Helmet cereal.
No, it should be. It should just be. I mean, you can get it in the batting helmet.
What about a color changing one? Like, remember those from the 90s?
I do remember that. Those were. I'm sure they still have. Remember when you get like a spoon and it would change from like cereal box?
Yes,
that'd be good.
I also thought. You know what I thought you were gonna say?
What?
Poppy's Fritas.
Poppy's Fritas. Yes, those would also be good. No, but. I just, really, my dream, again, as always, morning baseball, and I want to be
I feel like you and Claire just need to team up and plan this village, because then you could, like, make a nice little breakfast cafe. Obviously,
yeah.
Jeremy Hazel Bakery has all sorts of things for breakfast.
It's true, they could serve the Machados there. All
right. Honestly, we could do this in Cooperstown, small town, it's already baseball themed, it's already quaint as all get out.
That's true.
They're just waiting for the idea, Matt.
This is true. This is, you know, I just want to say, guys, that I appreciate that the Cut Forecast has really become the breeding ground for all great baseball-related pop culture ventures. Be it theme parks, be it HBO-style television shows, be it film. I think we've done a really good job here of fostering such a creative environment. I really do.
So true.
All right, let us move on. To this next thing. So there was a child last weekend, a Nationals fan, who was just emotionally distraught as her presumably favorite player, Jason Worth, was hit by a pitch. You can go to MLB.com/cut4. You can see it. Now, obviously, players get hit by pitches all the time. 99% of the time, it's an accident, and they just kind of, you know, it hits them in the arm or whatever. They sort of shrug it off. This girl was having none of it. She was very upset, and it was I could relate to that moment, and I think it raised a very important question, which is, what is the most irrational moment of fandom that you have experienced in your life where you felt similarly distraught to this young woman? Just your happiness was out of your own hands. It was at the behest of this behitted baseball player. Gemma, why don't we start with you?
I've had a lot of irrational fan moments in my life, as I'm sure we all have, and I can't really remember any that are like cute from my childhood.
They don't have to be cute. They can be very sad. Mine is from not that long ago.
Oh, no. So. Mine is going to be from when I was an adult, so it's okay.
Okay.
As I have said many times, I used to be a bartender, like a full-time bartender, and I worked in a sports bar, so I'd always have all these games on. We'd always get pretty busy for the World Series. So the Tigers lost the World Series in 2012.
Yeah.
And I was heartbroken about this. Also, that year, I walked into a bar in New York wearing a Tigers t-shirt, and the entire bar booed me.
Okay.
That was one thing that happened. But so then when the Tigers played in the 2013 postseason, I had a lot of hopes and dreams.
Okay.
And so I was working the night. It was like, if the Red Sox win this game, it's over for the Tigers, right? Mm-hmm. So I was working, and the whole bar was like, I had done all these hand-drawn signs, like all the chalkboards were super Tigers-y. And for some reason, despite these clear signs, the bar was flooded with Red Sox fans. Like, flooded.
Oh, no. What a shame.
So I blame you. I didn't even know you yet, but I still blame you. So I was clearly an adult at this point and bartending. And so the game is going on, and it seems like there's a chance. And then suddenly, like, that chance completely evaporates into thin air. And my waitress that I was working with was like, what should I be prepared for if the Tigers lose? Like, do I need to get behind them? Are you going to be okay? I was like, oh, it's fine. I'm going to be fine because I'm an adult at my job. Like, there's nothing that you're going to need to do. Like, I won't be upset. And then the Tigers lost the game, and I made her come behind the bar so I could go sit in the kitchen and come and, like, be upset and, like, drink a beer and be sad. Like, I was like, wow, I really actually don't want to be out here right now, and I forced someone else to do my job for me for 15 minutes so I could go whine in the kitchen.
That's sad.
I was an adult.
That's a sad story.
I was an adult, and I was being a huge baby about it.
Well, that's good.
That's my most irrational moment of fandom. It was disappointing.
Yeah.
Yes.
I wish I could have felt bad too, but I didn't.
You're the worst.
Claire, what was your most irrational moment of fandom?
So, unfortunately, mine is more just like, it wasn't like an outpouring of grief.
That's okay.
So what I used to do, it's really more kind of sad. I used to keep score at every game, no matter what. But while I kept score, I would not move from my seat all game. So I would have to get there an hour early if I wanted to eat any food. So once I was in my seat, unless someone would go get it for me, I couldn't eat anything, I couldn't drink anything, and I wouldn't go to the bathroom either.
Okay.
It was like, I'm here, I'm keeping score, and I did this until, like, I don't know, 3 years ago, maybe. Like, I was unhappy at games. I'd be like, I'm hungry, I'm thirsty, I need to go to the bathroom. It's like, I have to do this. So that is probably my most rational behavior. I've scaled it back now. We're like, I'll wander around, and I'll use Phil Rizzuto would just write WW for wasn't watching. So I'll now do that, because it's like, my scorecard is not going to the Hall of Fame. It's a personal document of my experience. So, like, if I want to wander around and eat 18 hot dogs, I'll just write, wasn't watching, ate 18 hot dogs.
I'm glad that you'll write that you ate 18
No, you should.
Hot dogs.
This is That's great, good. Because when, you know, years and years and years from now, when you're a super famous baseball persona, as I'm sure you will be, you know how, like, at the Smithsonian, they have stuff from the presidents who watch baseball? Like, here's a scorecard, here's our lifetime baseball pass. There's just going to be an entire wing of the Mike Clare Museum that has all of your scorecards.
So here's my dream, is that he's watching some game and, like, something super famous and historic happens while he's out eating 18 hot dogs, so that scorecard does become valuable. And then for all eternity, it gets passed down as this collector's item of, well, while this famous play was happening, this guy was off eating 18 hot dogs, which, well, I mean, I do that. I just don't keep a written record of it because I'm clever like that.
Then you can lie.
Yeah, you're like, yes, I was there.
I remember every second.
Yeah, it's like how famous, like, I think it's like the shot heard around the world. There's like 200,000 people said they saw it while they were there. You got to do that. Okay, mine. Frankly, they're still happening. So, like, right now, for example, irrational Red Sox fan, which, I mean, that's redundant. But irrational Red Sox fan Dakota thinks that David Ortiz should not retire, which is potentially the most irrational thing that I have ever thought. But moving beyond that, I'm going to leave the Red Sox for a second, because I still, to this day, and I was an adult when this happened. This was not that long ago. It was 2013. But I still, to this day, believe that in the 2013 National League wildcard game, that Johnny Cueto dropped that baseball because the crowd at PNC Park was shouting at him. And I will believe that until the day that I die. And I think that is kind of irrational to believe, because I have no way of knowing for sure. But I am 100% sure that that happened. But that's not where I'm gonna end. I'm gonna end here with a moment, also from 2013, from the World Series, Game 3, Red Sox Cardinals, comes down to the final out, and Dustin Pedroia makes a really great play on, I think it was John Jay, sort of lines it to second base. Pedroia makes the great play, fires it home for the out at home, and Jared Saltalamacchia makes a swipe on the tag for the out. And then he gets this look in his eyes. He's hungry. He wants another out. So he fires down to third base. Will Middlebrooks is there. The throw is not very good. So Will Middlebrooks has to dive for the throw. In doing so, late sort of splays out onto the ground. And I forget who it was. It was like Alan Craig maybe was rounding third and going home. And he trips over Middlebrooks. And it's this famous obstruction play.
Yes.
Which objectively, on all counts, was called perfectly by Jim Joyce in the moment, who recognized what was going on, called the obstruction play, ruled that the runner was safe at home, and that the Cardinals had won Game 3 of the World Series on that call. It's one of the, like, sort of pinnacles of really great umpiring.
Mm-hmm.
In that moment, to me, I was maintaining my professionalism and also totally crestfallen, and I was convinced that it's not. I was like, the rule is wrong. Yes, it was enforced properly, but this rule is terrible. I don't understand. And that was probably
advocating civil disobedience.
Yeah, that was
throwing boxes of baseballs into Boston Harbor.
I've never had that feeling of two warring factions of my brain. The left brain is like, this is so impressively correct that not only did the umpiring crew led by Jim Joyce have that, like, the presence of mind to call it exactly right with no delay. It wasn't like they had to confer and figure out what happened. Like, instantaneously he knew what happened and was like, you could see him calling safe at home obstruction. Like, it's amazing. And so, like, the left brain is like, oh, this is amazing. While the right brain is like, no, no, no. And just shouting at me in anger. That's the most irrational fandom moment I've ever had. And as you can tell, I still feel irrationally about it. And, It's completely irrational, and I shouldn't feel that way. This is my life. let's move on, though. Here's a quick thing. Independent leaguer Brandon Thomas. You can see this. MLB.com/cut4. You go there. Can't miss it. Photo as big as day. Hit a grand slam in his independent league matchup. And the ball traveled so far that it smashed the windshield of his own car. And my question to you is not, it doesn't have to be related to baseball, but what is the most embarrassing thing that you've done to your own car, that you've broken your own car? I'll start because I have two here. One is similar to this, but it wasn't my car. And
was it someone else's
car? Someone else's car. One is not, but there was one time that I just disengaged the parking brake on my car while my door was open, and it creeped back and it ripped the door back and, like, it wouldn't shut. Which is very frustrating. The thing that I didn't do to my own car, but somebody else's car, I was a child, and I picked up a stick, and I looked at this pickup truck, and I didn't put two and two together what was going on, but I saw that if I had rubbed the stick against the car, it went from black to white, and I was like, hey, that's cool. And so I played tic-tac-toe myself on the stick.
Oh,
and then I signed my name.
God!
And then I walked away. And later that night, this truck comes to my house. And I was at, like, a baseball game with, it was like my brother's Little League baseball game. And I was sort of sitting with my parents. So we go home. They come over to our house. And they're like, hey, gardeners.
Your name
son, like, graffitied our car with a stick. And they're like, really? And then they go, how did you know? And they were like, he wrote his name like an idiot on the car. So that happened. And my parents have literally never let me live with that.
And now we never will either.
And now you never will either. Gemma, what's the most embarrassing thing you've done to your own car? Or to somebody else's car, be it as it may.
I'm trying to think. I've had a lot of car problems in my life, but I'm trying to think
everybody's
if, like,
had
they're
car
embarrassing,
problems.
You know? One time when this is something that my dad did to my car. I have always driven a stick shift.
Okay.
And my first car was a Toyota RAV4 stick shift. And my dad, like, one morning I was going to school, my dad went to warm up the car for me. And if you don't put the parking brake on a stick shift, it'll just roll, you know? So that same thing happened because his car was parked in the driveway. And he, like, opened the door and got out and was like, okay, get in the car, and didn't engage the parking brake, and it rolled down the driveway and broke the door off.
Oh.
It hit his car and broke the door off. So then I was like, great, and I had to bum rides for, like, 2 weeks while I waited for my car to be fixed.
That's sad.
It was sad. I loved that car, too. My car was named Bernadette, and she was beautiful. She was sea green.
She lost a wing.
I'm trying to think. Yeah, she did.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah, like, I haven't really done anything super embarrassing. One time, my engine exploded in the parking lot of my high school, but I don't think that was my fault.
My God.
I think it's because I bought a 1997 Toyota RAV4.
Yeah, I don't blame that. Claire, what is your most embarrassing car story?
Oh, God, I had another one that was like, oh, it's not that bad. And then as you guys are talking, I remembered this. So I was getting my learner's – I had my learner's permit, and I was leaving, like, play rehearsal in high school. So my mom came to pick me up, and I was like, give me the keys because I'll drive. And, like, because everybody was, like, walking out, so I was like, they'll all see how cool I am while I drive my mom's minivan. Look how cool I am. So I'm backing up. Directly into a parked car across the street.
No!
While literally, like, 15 to 20 people were watching because they were, like, waiting for me to pull out, to, like, because it was, like, a driveway. So for them to leave, they had to wait for me to leave. So in full view of everyone, I'm like, I am so cool. Everyone's going to want to date me. I smashed into someone's car across the street.
No!
Poor Claire. That's the sad.
Poor other
That's
car.
That's a very sad story.
Oh, yeah. And then, yeah, when we had to go find that woman and be like, my very cool son smashed directly into your car.
At least it happened coolly.
One time I broke my inside view mirror.
Very chill.
Yeah.
That's sad.
Backing out of my driveway in Brooklyn.
Yeah, Brooklyn.
Yeah.
It's your fault for driving in Brooklyn.
No, it was. All right. I mean, broke my own side view mirror.
Let's get back to the baseball at hand here and away from our sad car stories. this weekend, Brett Gardner and Jacoby Ellsbury, two members of the New York Yankees, stole home runs away from the Angels in just stunning plays that you have to see to believe. Brett Gardner specifically is like on another level of one of the best catches of the year, if
now,
not the best catch.
Disclaimer: your last name is also Gardner, so there might be some bias here.
I'm not going to say that I didn't enjoy waking up to headlines Gardner makes year's greatest catch, but you know, it's pretty amazing. So you should definitely go check it out. MLB.com/cut4. But here's the question, because I picture yourself on the Yankees actually tweeted about this. They tweeted, they were like, I'm sure the Angels are frustrated to see our outfielders stealing so many home runs. But here's the question, is what is the most demoralizing thing that happens in baseball when you're watching? Like, you're cheering for the team and the ball is about to sail over the fence and somebody goes and makes this amazing catch. It's just so demoralizing. What is the most demoralizing thing you experience as a fan just in the field of play? Claire, we'll start with you.
So this week we've seen a lot of players being demoralized when, like, a fan reaches out to catch a foul ball. Like, you'll just see them be like, I got it. And then they just, like, they have to take, like, a second to be like, okay.
Yeah.
I should have had that ball. Get it together. Get it, like, compose myself. Like, they're, like, counting to 10 as they're, like, walking back.
Yeah.
The most demoralizing moment has to be, like, when a, like, player is, like, going for, like, either the win or, like, a shutout. So it's either the pitcher at, like, 4 2/3 innings. He's like, just get me that fifth inning. I want that win. Or it's, like, the ninth inning. He's like, I want to finish it off. And then they just, like, a guy gets the second and he leaves. He's got the shutout. He doesn't get the complete game. And then the reliever, like, then gives up a run for him. So even then, he doesn't even have, like, a sparkling, like, zero next to his, like, stat line. I always feel like that's, like, just, like, really depressing.
Yeah.
Especially when they cut to him in the dugout. You can see him just be like, this is my teammate. I have to show support. But, you know, inside they're like, I wouldn't have given up that run. I would have gone out of that.
That's true. I imagine that that's really frustrating as a pitcher. Like, just the whole thing. Because I feel like 99.9% of the time the pitchers think they can keep going.
Oh, yeah.
And so, like, you get pulled, and then somebody gives up a couple runs, and it's like, oh, it's a team sport. Most of the time they get them out. That would definitely be frustrating. Gemma, what do you think is the most, like, demoralizing thing as a fan that happens in the game?
I also thought of pitchers and, like, what happens in their minds constantly. Like, both in the past 2 years, Anibal Sanchez has had two games that went like 7 no-hit innings that the Tigers eventually lost by like an insane margin.
Yeah.
So I think it must be really frustrating to feel that you did the best work you possibly could and you threw 7 no-hit innings and somehow you still lose by 5 runs.
Right.
I think that's got to be really exhausting and stressful. We have that really great gif of Justin Verlander giving up a hit like with 2 outs in the 9th inning of a no-hitter.
Right.
Like, when you're that close, or Max Scherzer hitting Jose Tapia's elbow in his almost perfect game, like, just being so close to this moment and just missing it, I feel like I would just want to give up and go home, like, canceled, over. But I think what is probably to me the most demoralizing is when a player fails at something that you know they can do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, outfielders spiking the ball. That always makes me so sad for them. Because you know that they can make that throw. They make that throw all the time, constantly. And just this one time when 20,000 people are watching them. It's like, this is the moment that you screw up. It's so heartbreaking and embarrassing. This thing that you've trained for forever and can do. It's like watching people in the Olympics belly flop into the diving pool when you know 99 times out of 100 they make a perfect dive. It's always like, oh, this was your moment. And now you spiked the ball and everyone's going to make fun of you forever and ever and ever.
I do think that
so
is
demoralizing.
A unique thing about baseball, though, is that because there's 162 games, 9 innings, like there's more baseball than
right.
there is any other sport. And so, like, just in terms of percentages,
you can
like,
always redeem
guys.
Yourself.
No, I mean, like, the reason why I think, like, it feels like baseball players sometimes do silly stuff a lot is because there's so much time. Like, if a football season was 162 games yeah. long, I'm sure you'd see every football player do something boneheaded all the time. And so, like, it's a thing where just, like, they're living lives essentially.
Yeah.
You get to watch, and who among us doesn't like occasionally do something?
I mean, I give
silly.
So much credit to the guys when they do something like that, and then they like smile and shake
I
it
know.
Off because I would start crying and like curl up into a ball and need to be carted off the field by the grounds crew.
Well, I do. I think there's something you said for that too. That like the reason they're in the majors is like yes, they're all great, but also when they aren't great, they can move on and it's fine. Whereas like for me, if I did that, I would be done for my career and that would be it.
Just I would be eaten alive by the fires of embarrassment.
Yeah,
I would burn to a crisp and they'd be like, where is she? Why is there so much ash in the air?
That's just one other thing.
Yeah.
For me, I think demoralizing as a fan like is just the stuff that comes out of nowhere and just punches you in the gut. So like a grand slam is a really great example. Like if you're leading and somebody hits a grand slam, you're like, oh, now like all that work we did to get ahead in the game and now we're not, and like that's really frustrating. Even if you are ahead, now it's like, oh well, we're ahead by less, and it's just the grand slam itself, it's kind of obvious that that would be so demoralizing, but it's extremely demoralizing. I also think like any inning slash inning and rally ending defensive like stunner, like a highlight defensive play out and like a diving full extension catch to just end the inning after you sort of like you're working the bases load, you're like, all right, this is it, this is gonna be our chance to get back in this game, and then nope, JK now, and you also have to watch that catch 15 times when you get home on SportsCenter and on MLB Network, and it's like, yeah, great, like that's great, thanks very much for that, awesome. And you have to and like you can't, and if you're upset about it, it's very sour grapesy because you're like, well, yeah, okay, that's frustrating, but he made this really great catch, I should be happy that I saw that, but whatever, this is terrible. But then I think like this is one of those things that my Red Sox fandom is showing that like is extremely demoralizing, is when a great closer comes into the game and you're trailing and it's the 9th inning and you're like, all right, we're gonna get back into this. And the closer comes in, and it usually happens in the first at bat, sometimes it's in the second at bat, where you know, oh, okay, they're feeling it tonight. And that's terrible. That is like the lowest of the low as a baseball fan. If you're like, all right, this is the last inning, you're getting yourself hyped, you're ready to go, all right, we can make it, we can come back. And then, nope, JK, Mariano Rivera's having, not that I'm personally scarred by Mariano Rivera, but Mariano Rivera comes in and you're like, oh, okay, he's not going to give up any hits today. That is, that's like a pit in the bottom of the netherworld, really.
Of the netherworld. I like the rally thing. That's definitely
the rally thing.
Like even
tough.
If even if you know your team wins a game, but let's say you know you like score, your team gets up to a crazy lead. Even if you ultimately win, if you get up to like a 8-10 run lead, and then the other team somehow manages to tie, it doesn't even matter if you win. It's truly demoralizing.
Like, I think that's the difference between me and like the no hitter and the perfect game. I expect those to go awry. Like I'm watching them. And the whole time I'm like, is he going to give it up here? Is he going to give it up here? And so like when it happens, it's almost like a relief in a way of like the tension is let out. Whereas like a diving stop to end a rally or whatever is like it just comes out of nowhere. And you're like, oh, man, we were going so well. And it just blindsides you.
I just have a lot of personal anxiety for players.
I
always
so
put
stressed.
Myself in their shoes and it upsets me for them.
It's especially now like with the postseason races starting. It's so stressful to watch baseball.
and now we're coming up on possibly the saddest stuff. Like you won't know it's sad now, but like 10 years later, because now when we get to September, the guys who are like 10-year minor league vets will come up and get like 10 at bat. And you might think maybe they'll get another chance, and then 10 years from now you'll see their stats page and you'll see like 17 at bats, one hit, no RBIs, no home runs, and that's their career. And that's just like crushes me.
Well, but that's sad. That's not demoralizing.
That made me so sad, Claire.
Unfortunately, we have to leave it there. We're running out of time. So we need to sum up this podcast, as we always do, into 140 characters. One tweet that adequately and accurately condenses the pod into one chunk. Claire, what do you got for us?
My hands are covered in melted ice cream, and we gave up the lead. Hashtag FML, hashtag cut forecast.
Wow. Okay.
Wow.
Strong.
Sad.
Gemma, what do you got for us? What is your tweet for this week?
Feeling demoralized or irrational that Jake Arrieta didn't get another no-hitter? Soothe your feelings with some risotto balls.
That's good. That's really good.
It's too long, but it's too long, work.
But I admire your
I'll put it all on a graphic of the risotto balls.
You'll do like a tweet
getting
story.
Around all the character limits. Yep.
Yeah. Mine is... there is nothing demoralizing about my love of Machados. Is it irrational, question mark? No. Hashtag cut forecast.
Muted.
No, you're all muted. Terrible. If you have a better tweet that more accurately summarizes our podcast into 140 characters, please tweet it at us at cut4 with the hashtag cut4cast, and we will retweet the best ones, like the slightly less best ones, and I will personally and mercilessly mock the people who have terrible ones. That is a
good incentive.
That's a good incentive. You can also go to mlb.com/cut4 and read every single thing that we write. It all goes up there. Gemma has lovely and talented articles on our site. Michael Claire has lovely and talented articles on our site. You should go check those out. You can also follow us on Twitter at cut4. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/cut4. Wouldn't you know it, this podcast is on iTunes and many other podcasting outlets. But if you go to iTunes, write a review and leave a rating, it will show up in our feed and we can read it on the Cut 4 cast, which is our promise to you. Gemma, thank you as always for being here.
You are welcome.
Mr. Claire, thank you for joining us from Los Angeles.
Ah, thank you for having me.
But mostly, thank you for listening, and we will talk to you.